Although they've been pretty infrequent this season, I make no apologies for that, I've just been really busy. This is another Football Fans Podcast and the people behind CelticUnderground.net.
People might say that I should strive for more, but I'm so happy I can't see a thing. Things happening here today.
We have a new guest on the podcast this week. I'm sure you're going to like it. It says, I'll let the protagonists, I'm not on the podcast this week, I'll let the protagonists introduce themselves. If you don't like the podcast this week, it's fine, just email us in, podcast@celticunderground.net, and we will give you a full refund on your annual subscription. Anyway, we've had some ups and downs this season. Hopefully, the result against Aberdeen, following on from the result against St Johnstone in the League Cup, will show something positive about the team, and we can be in an upward trajectory. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with our new special guest and guests.
Welcome to another podcast with me, St Anthony. We've got a very special guest here tonight in the podcast. It's St Anthony Jr., who goes by the name of Michael. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, good to be here.
Good to be here. I know you're quite nervous, so I promise your mother I'm going to be gentle with you. So let's crack into the podcast proper then. The first question we always ask on the podcast is, what was the first Celtic game you remember and who was your first Celtic hero?
I remember vaguely in the 10-11 season going to a few European games, and I think it was a home against Braga. In the Europa League, but vividly, probably, actually, ironically, it was my first away game, and that was against Kilmarnock. It was 3-3 at Rugby Park. The one that saved Neil Lennon's job, really, after half time. So I remember getting thrown about like a rag doll that day.
It's interesting to note that day, that was quite a big day in terms of the fact it was John Doyle's, I think it was his 30th anniversary, I think, of his passing, and we went to the graveyard in Kilmarnock. The Celtic Graves had a commemoration that day, so it was quite a memorable day in more ways than one.
Yeah, buried beforehand. My first Celtic hero was probably Gary Hooper. I had a big poster of him up in my bedroom wall, and I used to bang them in left, right and centre, and I remember being in complete awe and amazement of him when he scored 5 against Hearts in the last game of the season. I think that was 2013.
I think the sad thing about Hooper is that he was a quality striker, he was a goal scorer. Didn't want to get involved in the build-up, he just wanted to be there in the area.
He was, yeah.
But he could have done better than Norwich. I always remember being feeling a bit desperate that they were in the English Premiership. He's English, there's an attraction that he wants to go back home. I can fully understand that, but I think he could have held out for better than Norwich.
Yeah, I agree. So, especially because not long after they got relegated into the Championship.
Where is he now?
Sheffield Wednesday, I think. I agree with you. There was rumours about him coming back a few years ago, but nothing ever happened. But yeah, definitely, he was.
So Gary Hooper was your favourite?
Yeah.
Right, moving on to current affairs then. What do you think is the reason for Celtic's indifferent start to the season? Because let's look at it closely. There was a disappointment with AEK Athens. You know, the league form's been patchy. We don't seem to be scoring goals. Considering the standard that we've set ourselves in the last couple of seasons, we're falling short of that. So, in your eyes, what would the reason for that be?
I mean, it's tough because there has been a bit of a shadow looming over Celtic since the start of the season. There's a lot of reasons behind it, a lot of variables that have unfortunately went the other way this year so far. But I think on the pitch, the main thing would be the defence, especially in Europe, I'd say, because the three goals we conceded against AAK were
poor, weren't they?
They were really poor and really preventable as well. And I feel as though if we hadn't been so lucky at the back in that game, we could have made the Champions League, because the round afterwards was an easier draw, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
However,
that is the galling thing, because if we'd have got through against Athens, I think we would have fancied ourselves against the Hungarian team.
And obviously the whole Bayata fiasco during the game, that I think we probably would have got through, just because Bayata's our best centre half at the moment. He's been, I think, by the Celtic fans, we weren't keen on him after.
Well, he got a hard time in the game that he came back, but since then he's been excellent.
He's shown himself how good since he's bounced back. And debatably our best player at the moment, he's holding the team together. But yeah, definitely, because Jack Hendry is just, I don't mean to be harsh on anybody, and I used to think he was good enough domestically, but
he's having a hard time, isn't he?
He is having a hard time, and I'm not really sure what to do with him, especially because so many injuries in the defensive department.
I mean, that's a good point you made there about injuries, because the irony about Jack Henry is that if everybody was fit, you've probably got Bayata, you've got Benkovic, you've got Simunovic, you've got Ayer, and you've got Nir Beaton, who can all play centre back.
I'm not sure if Beaton plays football anymore, but
no, Beaton, I know, but you know, given the fact if everybody was fit, then Jack Henry arguably would be the sixth choice centre back. But you're right there, you know, like when Bayata's back, he's dummy out, and Simunovic is injured, and Beaton's injured, Ayer gets injured, then all of a sudden Jack Henry is basically it.
Do you know, when we sign players from Scotland, they've usually got a name for themselves, you know, most recently Johnny Hayes. I understand why we signed him. You know, he was Aberdeen's best player, out with us, debatably the best in the league at that point. But when Hendry came along, he didn't really have much of a reputation. You know, he was rejected from Wigan. He didn't have too much of a reputation at Thistle, he hadn't been at Dundee for a great length of time. And to be honest, I hadn't really heard of him. So I was surprised, but I was hopeful we'd do well, because I don't think Brendan would have signed him for no reason whatsoever. But
well, here's the funny thing then.
Much at all, if anything.
We beat Aberdeen at the weekend, and Scott McKenna's playing for Aberdeen. You know, if you believe the newspapers, and there was definite interest, Celtic were after Scott McKenna for as much as maybe £4 or £5 million, if you believe the newspaper reports. So having seen Scott McKenna at the weekend, how do you think he compares to our centre-backs?
I think Scott McKenna is another one who has, this time a year ago, I hadn't heard of him. He's had a few good games, he scored a peach that got himself in the papers as well. But overall, it's obviously, it's hard to judge, because, I mean, that's one of the few games I've seen him play, but there's nothing there.
I don't think there's anything special on him.
And we certainly wouldn't be signing him if he wasn't Scottish. That's the point I've been trying to make. Because scouting wise, recently, if you look at Christopher Ayer, right, we got him from Norway, and he's offered a lot and could potentially, you know, improve a lot in the future. And he's offered a lot this season, more so. But when we see these players getting signed, it's a bit nonsensical. We don't really think things through. Is this guy good enough? Has he got enough experience? Because that's another thing as well. We're not really signing, obviously, when we got Comper, we were thinking he could come in, but he's not.
He's finished.
He's kaput, to be honest. But he's a type of signing, it's quite gone, because he's a type of signing that
we should be looking for.
Yeah, we should be looking for, because if you look at his his CV. He's
some pedigree, uh-huh. when you look at, as you say, look at his record.
Uh-huh.
But getting back to McKenna, the thing that I find it hard to comprehend is, if Celtic were offering £5 million, if I was Aberdeen, I'd have bit your hand off for that.
Well, Aberdeen were quite stubborn. I think, was it Hull that was in for him? And they said they wanted as much as 10.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that. Mind you, I suppose, we saw Adam Rooney go to the fifth division in England. If we start to become a bit more stubborn and say, well, we're not paying the absolute minimum here from English clubs, then Scottish football might begin to come up in the transfer market a bit.
Now, on the other hand, now we've looked at the problems that we've had, particularly in defence, but who do you think have been the best players that we've had so far in your eyes?
So far, I would say that Olivier Cham has stood out.
He had a great game against Rangers, didn't he?
He did, yes. He ran the show. And I sometimes think his decision making is a bit poor, and I question his lack of effort.
I don't think he lacks effort as much as he's got an easy style on the eye.
I suppose so.
Some players,
I know what you mean.
Give you that impression, but it's quite deceiving.
I think since Mr. Dembele's left, I feel as though both him and Edward have.
Is he missing his pal?
Yeah. Essentially, it's as simple as that, really.
So who else then, apart from Cham?
Apart from Cham, I would say, I've got to say, I've been impressed with Craig Gordon. He's not really been at fault for much. I think Tierney's always reliable.
Now, talking about Tierney, what about the two tackles at the end of that Aberdeen game?
Oh, they were superb.
That has to be mentioned. That was awesome.
It just shows you he wears his heart on his sleeve and he loves Celtic to bits, because he went flying into that one, the first one particularly, and could potentially have got his 2 points, because they were on the counter attack.
They're the kind of tackles as well, they have to be perfectly timed. A fraction out and you're really going to damage somebody you're talking about sending off. Even more referees, but the fact is it was perfectly timed.
It was, yeah.
And people make a lot of
I saw a few people beside me celebrating that as good as a goal.
Yeah. People make a lot of it Tierney and his technical play, because he's great going forward, he's a good crosser, he creates chances for strikers for the fullback position, but I think people underestimate that for a slight boy he's a powerful tackler. So my concern last season was the fact that I felt personally that Tierney and Brown carried the team.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And my hope for this season was that two or three others would step up and share the load. And I'm finding myself worrying now that we're in the same position as last season. You've got Tierney, you've got Brown. Every week, consistent performances. The only guys that really put themselves about in the pitch is Tierney proved. Probably throw Lee Griffiths in as well if he gets a run of games, because Griffiths is a fighter as well. But you know, but in terms of the rest of the team, then who is anybody else impressed?
Boyata, obviously. Yeah, I'm really disappointed. I'd say post August Boyata, from start of September onwards, he's been really reliable. James Forrest as well, maybe. He's not really got off to the start he did last year, but
The worry about Forrest is he gets into a wee rut, because he doesn't get Paddy Roberts there to keep him on his toes.
Yeah, there's not as much competition in the right this year.
That goes to the opposite question is, now that we've discussed who you've been impressed with, who have you been disappointed in? Is there any particular disappointment so far? Yeah. Who's thought he'd step up to the plate?
I think the big ones probably would include Tom Rogic and Odson Edward. Rogic has really been poor. He's been, you know, lackadaisical in passing, and he's not had the presence he owned last year, particularly towards the end of last year, but he was on fire. Edward as well. I understand he's still, 19? And he's still a boy. But you know, you look last year, and for the his goals per games ratio were excellent. I mean, he got his hat trick against Motherwell. You know, and he had goals scattered around all over the place. He got one against Hamilton, I remember. But, and he's not really doing that anymore. You know, we're not looking for big game performances every single week in, week out. But he's almost been like a ghost, really, up front. He's not seen much of the ball either, really.
Mm-hmm. You wonder if there is a fact that Cham and Edward are missing Dembele, because obviously they are friends, they share a bond, the three of them, by all accounts, hung about together, and now that you've went for 3-2, so maybe they're missing their
part. I know it's hard to admit, but Dembele was a player with absolute class, and I know he didn't score as many goals as he did in the Invincible season, but that was due to injury problems and competition at times with Griffiths and Edward, but he really did have that sort of, you know.
The thing about Dembele we forget is he had a physical presence.
Yeah.
It's not until he's not there that you think that we lack a wee bit of strength up front. And a wee bit, as I said, he had a presence, you know, he made things difficult for defenders. Defenders actually bounced off him at times.
Yeah.
So I don't think Edwards and get the same build.
No, I agree with you. Because we saw Thiago Silva saying that Dembele was one of the hardest opponents he's faced, and that really says a lot for him. But no, he's just his build. I feel as though he stays closer to defenders. He doesn't give them a moment's peace, really. Edward doesn't really do that. You know, he's not there when you want him to make the run. He's just. I feel as though he's actually better out wide. Part of me's wanting to say that because, you know, he's got...
He likes to cut him to the left.
Yeah, he does. And we saw that, obviously, the winner at Ibrox in March. He does. He likes to cut in, and he's got a lot of technique in the ball. Once he gets the ball, I don't know whether it's down to confidence, but so far he's not been shown, you know, wee tricks and flicks here and there. It makes a big difference.
The other thing as well is at the beginning of the season, Brendan had tried the two up front thing with Dembele and Edward, and it looked as if it was about to click.
Yeah.
And then obviously injuries putting into that, and then Dembele goes. So I don't think Griffiths and Edward have got the same rapport together as what Dembele and Edward have.
It was the game against Alaska, and I know we're playing against poor opposition, but they, as you said, really did seem to click.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quite hopeful, and to be honest, before the rumours about Lyon started coming in, I thought Dembele was content. I thought he was staying. I thought that kind of blown over. He would maybe.
If you were Peter Lobel and Lyon came in the last day of the transfer window, and you know there's no chance of getting a quality replacement, What would your take have been? Would you have sold him, or would you just tell him you just need to suck it up and go on with
it? I would have probably said either a swap deal, because I know that was a possibility, or say, can we hold on to them till January and we can sort something out then? Because, I mean, that would have helped us out big time.
Mm.
And if it could have done, I'm trying to think of an example here. We saw Gabriel Jesus, who went to Manchester. He stayed on in Brazil until the end of a season, but a deal had already been made.
Yeah,
Lewis Morgan, there you go.
So
maybe that type of thing had been done, and that way Dembele might have actually had a better attitude towards Celtic.
I think the thing about Dembele as well is that he sees himself as a Champions League player, and when we didn't qualify, then I can just imagine him and his agent, you know, like desperate to get away. So now he's signed for Lyon, and they've got a Champions League place. So he's keeping his profile high.
Yeah.
So is there signs that Scott Sinclair's coming back in a bit of form?
Scott Sinclair's a really hard one, because if somebody had said to you he'd be your player of the year 2 seasons ago, your top scorer last season, and then. He's
an empty jersey.
And it, even though he was top scorer last year, it's the contrast between the two seasons were incredible. He just seemed a different player, and you usually find reasoning behind these things, but there really wasn't. And in the first season, I've always liked Tierney from the start, but I felt as though he was a wee bit of a decoy for Sinclair at times.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, Tierney was really, he was having to play for two players. He was overlapping Sinclair.
Sinclair was actually getting Tierney's way last season.
I remember we were at Fir Hill.
In row A, right in the halfway line.
Uh-huh. And they were constantly arguing.
Do you know that I was going to bring that up actually, uh-huh, because the verbals that the Tierney gave to Sinclair that night, because he was hiding, he wasn't shown, yeah, and Tierney, when Tierney had the ball, Sinclair was basically, he'd been lazy because he was just standing there. Mm-hmm. And I think Tierney was saying, well, you either need to come and show for me, or you need to turn and run, in which case I can put the ball over the top. Yeah. And that was, you know, even you've remembered that. I mean that always sticks in my mind, that he gave him absolute pillars, didn't he?
You know, I think Sinclair made a difference. He would always, and I mean always, take a man on.
Yeah.
And 3 out of 5, he'd beat him, or at least, you know, get a corner out of it or something like that. Last year, he would very, very rarely, you know, take on a man. He would always just either pass it back to Brown or Tierney, and then we'd end up with this whole 2-3 minutes of passing it round the back until, you know, a little gap opens again. And that makes a big difference, it does. But this season, I've got to say, there has been a bit of improvement. I was impressed with, you know, his improvisation for the goal, the winner against Aberdeen.
The back killer.
Yeah, and of course, he got his back into the game in Athens as well. But yeah, overall he has been, you know, I mean, he's been shooting a bit more, he's been looking a bit more direct.
I actually wonder if he's lost a bit of pace for whatever reason. I don't know if it's an injury or whatever, but the Scott Sinclair that came to Celtic at the beginning basically knocked the ball by a defender, and there was no way the defender was getting him. He was electric, and yet he is very loath to go on the outside now. It's almost as if he's trying to he's trying to make up for some deficiency in his game, and that's why I wonder if he's lost that, because even the great players that are blessed with pace, you don't keep that your whole career.
Yeah.
You know, comes a point in your career that, or your football life, that you're certainly no slow, but you haven't quite get that burst that you had before it.
Yeah, and I mean, last year I felt as though Sinclair was living on the year before. He was living on
reputation.
On reputation, and I was a bit annoyed with Brendan over picking him consistently when, you know, he could maybe change the formation up a wee bit and, you know, add something a bit fresh. And that didn't happen. And like you said, Sinclair was an empty jersey at times.
I actually think Brendan has learned to play without Scott Sinclair, because the first season he was irreplaceable, with nobody like him, he was totally unique. And yet, towards the end of last season there, he dropped out of favour, and Callum McGregor got that role on the left, not as an attacking player in the way that Sinclair plays, but just to give the team balance on the left hand side. And I have to say, McGregor's performances at the end of last season were good, but he doesn't have that, he doesn't offer you that pace and sharpness that Sinclair does when he's on his game.
Mm-hmm. I think, McGregor, he was the only player last year who either started or was on the bench in every single game, domestically, I think. I hope that's right. But, but as you said, week in, week out, he didn't always, you know, provide for a goal or anything, but just performances, you know, link-up play, just stuff that Sinclair actually wasn't, just to simple, the basics. And that's, I mean, it wasn't outstanding in the life of McGregor. I still feel as though centrally he's a lot better, but you could debate, despite Scott Sinclair, it's mental, because Scott Sinclair, what was it, 19 goals he got? And we're still debating on how, you know, a guy who's unfamiliar to his own position is debatably better than.
So you and I are sitting here, and it's Wednesday night, for the record, and it's just been announced a couple of hours ago that we have to play Hearts at Tynecastle in the semi-final of the League Cup after all the to and fro. What did I say?
Tynecastle.
Sorry, but if they had their way, they would play at Tynecastle. it's at Murrayfield, obviously, and this whole fiasco for the last 10 days. So what's your take on that?
I feel as though it was a very rushed decision that they didn't need to make. I'm talking about the two semi-finals in the one day, and it was never going to work. It never was. And I was listening in Radio Scotland to Anne Budge talking about what her experiences with you know, the SFA and their response to it, and she said, when obviously she suggested the obvious, which would be to have one on the following weekend, or even the weekend before, just any sort of way. And they said they could not find a way to reschedule a game from now to the end of March, which I think is ludicrous. There's got to be a way. I understand, because you've got the winter break, it may be a tighter schedule now than previously, but nonetheless, it just seems, why should they? You'd be playing two games in the one day, and you've got a whole year to be playing league games.
Now, you and I travelled to Murrayfield 3 or 4 seasons ago now, but when it was the two European games, and you know, I have to say that in my opinion, it wasn't a very pleasant experience, because so many Celtic fans were coming through from the west to the east at rush hour traffic in midweek, and you know. The hope is that because it's a Sunday, the traffic might be a wee bit lighter, but nevertheless, it's still going to be a bit of a chore.
Yeah, I don't like Murrayfield, especially. I can understand when Hearts were getting their main stand done up last year. That's fine for them.
Mm-hmm.
However, we didn't get there to the second half in the first game, which was again in
a crash. Icelandic team.
Starnan, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The second game was better. We made kick-off, but mm-hmm. only through experience.
Mm-hmm. Legia.
We won't talk about that game. But, I was really annoyed when I heard that there was a possibility of Murrayfield becoming the new national stadium, because that was never in a million years going to work. Hampden could be falling down in pieces. I would still prefer it over Murrayfield.
Mm-hmm.
If you Glasgow Edinburgh's two lanes, if you've got Celtic and Rangers fans coming in that same motorway, it's going to be
carnage.
It would be essentially.
Yeah, I mean, that was never a goer. I have to say the Murrayfield thing was used as a ruse to basically get Queen's Park to drop their price and get out the building. Mm-hmm. So it was, but. No, it'll be interesting to see what the attendance is like at Murrayfield, because it holds, by all accounts, it holds 67,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, given the fact that Hearts would have took 25,000 to Hampden, you would think maybe they'll be at least mustering that.
Yeah.
And you know, it'll be interesting to see what kind of Celtic support you get in the day.
And another thing is, Murrayfield wasn't built to be a football stadium, really, was it?
No.
You could argue the same, because Hampden's a bowl shape, and it always has been, but nonetheless, I still feel as though you get a good atmosphere in Hampden. Obviously, that's not really been tested at Murrayfield, but even so, I just feel as though Hampden's a much better bet. You don't. When's the last time, you know, Hearts and Hibs have both been? Hearts and Hibs have both been in a semi-final or a final, you know.
5-1, I think Hearts won.
There you go. And it doesn't make much of a difference from maybe Aberdeen coming.
No, I think the point is that there's tradition here, if you like, in as much as, you know, Glasgow is a football city.
Yeah.
It's got two of the biggest teams in European football, but within the city. Hampden has been the national stadium for many, many years. It's a football stadium, therefore people who are coming for their cities know that when they're coming to Hampden to either see cup finals, semi-finals, or see Scotland playing, then they've been doing it for decades now.
Glasgow for football, Edinburgh
for rugby. That's what it comes down to. So what's your hopes for the rest of the season then? I mean, we're sitting in the semi-finals. We've got the European game coming up tomorrow night against Salzburg, which is going to be very difficult over in Austria. Mm-hmm. So what would be your hopes for the season? Would you be concentrating more in the league, getting the league form up to speed?
For me, domestic priorities are, like, you can, you know, compromise with the league, because it's a must win. If we take our eye off it for 1 second, this year, we have got competition. I think that Hearts should, whether or not they will, fade away, but Rangers have upped their game a lot since.
The interesting thing about that is that Hearts play Rangers on Saturday. Yeah. Now, if by all accounts Hearts were to win, they go 11 points in front of Rangers. Now, even at this early stage of the season, 11 points is a considerable lead. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes when you get a team who get who get momentum and go on a run of games, then it's you know, things begin to go your way. You get decisions and your confidence is up. So you actually wonder that if Hearts could get a result against Rangers at the weekend, you probably for the first time in many years, you could have three, maybe even four teams in a league race, because Hibs are playing really well as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm counting out Livingston, because
Livingston will follow.
They will follow. But yeah, and the annoying thing is, we played Hearts, they beat us, mm-hmm. and we put out a team with Ibuie Kouassi,
Johnny Hayes.
Johnny Hayes, I can accept.
I think the point you'd make is it was an understrength team.
Yeah, it was, and it was one where Brendan has, as he has many times before, particularly last season, taken his eye off the league for European and European games, and maybe that's because he wants to gain a reputation down in England for when he leaves Celtic. And maybe they focus more on European results. But for a Celtic fan, if we were to lose 10 in a row, it would be over.
I know.
We've been going on about this. And this,
I mean, people talk about 10 in a row, like that we need to get 8 before we get 10. Uh-huh. So that you're right, this is a priority.
Uh-huh. And in May, when we'd won the double treble, and Rangers were nowhere to be seen. We'd beaten them 9-0 over the last two games. But all of a sudden, as you say, it's very easy to gain momentum quickly in football.
Mm.
And
just as easy to lose it.
Yeah, as we've shown. Pundits take their side, and, you know, I want to say they've got the ball rolling, but they've not really.
Mm.
Because as much as, you know, they've shown something that we've not, and that's beating teams by 2, 3, 4 goal margins. But they got the good beat against Livingston. You know, they dropped points at Motherwell and Aberdeen, and obviously they were beating off us. But nonetheless, I feel as though they are twice as stronger than they were last year.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to pose a threat. They will stay up with us, I believe. So we're not going to win the league by 15-20 points this year.
I think this one's going to be a lot closer than it's been the last few years. So you and I are always having discussions about team selection and things like that when we're driving to the football. And we've got St Johnstone coming up at the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So, name your team for the St Johnstone game. Now, and there's two things here, and I always make this point to Harry Brady as well when I'm on it. Do you want to know the team I would pick or the team I think Brendan will pick? Mm-hmm. So, let's start with the team that you would pick. You personally, if you had to pick the Celtic team to play St Johnstone, okay, who would you go for? So, goalkeeper?
Goalkeeper, Craig Gordon.
Back four.
I'm a big enough fan of Scott Bain, but he's going to be the substitute goalie for some time unless Gordon gets an injury. Back four, I would go Tierney, that's a definite. Boyata as well. And will Benkovic be back?
Well, that we don't know. So obviously you would have Benkovic in if he's fit.
Benkovic in if he should be fit, yes, in front of Hendry.
Now who would be right back then?
Right for me, Gamboa, every day of the week. I love Loose Digs to bits. However, I am amazed how Christian Gamboa is still putting up with us, because he came with a pedigree that not many signings have offered over the last few years.
Well, let's look at it. He came for English Premiership.
He came for English
something.
He was playing there for...
He's a World Cup internationalist.
He's got about 50, 60 caps for his course.
He did really well in the World Cup. If he hadn't played for us, he'd have looked at him and said, well, he's not a bad player if we can get him. And yet he had two cracking games this season.
He did.
Against this Lipford Hill and then Rosenborg away in the qualifiers. And yet we never saw him again.
And he got mad at that match at Rosenborg. Loose Digs not done... I'm not sure how long, but the game at Fir Hill, he was making runs, overlapping Forrest. I think it was Forrest playing that day, overlapping Forrest, and he got an assist. He was swinging in crosses all the time, and Lustig
doesn't have the energy now, does he?
He doesn't have the energy, and he hasn't really for some time.
Can be quite painful to watch Lustig now, because
he's an old man at times. He really does.
When somebody gets by him, he doesn't have any recovery now.
No.
Whereas a couple of seasons ago,
the first goal in Athens, that was really.
He had that big stride to get back, but he's sort of lost that as well. And you forget, but he has no Lustig. He's not.
And Gamboa offers so much pace and energy, and that's what we're missing. And see if Gamboa goes, we've not got a backup. And that's the most... If we let Gamboa go, it's going to be...
Ralston.
And it's really going to be a massive mistake. And there must be something personal going on, because just about every time Gamboa comes in, he offers something that looks like... When we're passing it about the back four at the halfway line, he will start to drive and maybe, get a pass to Forrest, and as I say, make that run and overlap, or play in somebody like Tom Rogic, and all of a sudden you're on the attack. And that does happen with him a lot more.
The thing about Gamboa is, the problem Celtic's got for me at the moment is, nobody takes responsibility on the ball. As soon as somebody gets the ball, they just want to pass, take the easy option and pass. Now what I liked about Gamboa was, see when a wee gap opened, he ran through the gap and he committed players and he created space for the others. Whereas what tends to happen this season with Celtic is, when players get the ball, it's just to me to you, and a lot of the times it goes back rather than forward when there's no need to pass it back, and that really, really frustrates me about this team now. Whereas Gamboa, I think when he get the ball, he was always only interested in bursting into the space. So, I can see where you're coming from, Gamboa right back.
I've not got a problem with the way Brendan plays. I think it's the best possible solution. And I would never have thought I'd been questioning it after his first season here, because the tempo is so much higher, people are making runs, it was the way it's supposed to be played. We are just playing it to death now. I mean, teams can read us if they just put two banks of four.
The personnel hasn't changed that much, so you wonder what is it? Is it the tactics, is it the instructions?
Well, that's what we as fans can't know. We don't know if Rodgers is really hyped up and wants to get the players going and they're not up for it, or vice versa. Rodgers hasn't been offering anything new since he's came in, really.
Right, so you've got Gamboa at right back then. Move forward into midfield then.
Into midfield. I would go Brown and Cham.
Right.
On the right, Forrest. On the left, Sinclair. I'd give him a start. Should nothing happen, maybe... put somebody like Lewis Morgan on, Who could?
So who have you got through the centre then? Who's in the ten role?
I'm surprised I'm saying this, but it would be McGregor, even though Rogic at times can show himself to be our best player. He's not been doing it this season. So McGregor is more than good enough to replace him. And the thing about McGregor is inconsistent, especially.
McGregor will give you a 6 or 7 out of 10 every week. Whereas Rogic is either going to give you a 9 or a 4.
Yeah. And up front, Griffiths, I don't think. He's the type of player that's got to get a run in the team. Start consistent.
There's wee signs now that he's played 3 or 4 games that he's coming back to the fore. Some of the goals he's been getting this season have been excellent. Another thing about Griffiths is that in terms of the SPL and the domestic game, if Griffiths plays 30 games, he's going to get you 25 goals, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? At that level, he's a terrific player.
We're wary about injuries as well.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I'm hopeful for Edward. I hope he does improve sooner rather than later.
So we always ask at the end, we're talking about the St Johnstone game, now we ask for a prediction, and my answer to Harry Brady is always, one more than them will day me.
Yeah.
So in terms of the prediction for Sunday, what would it be?
2-0.
2-0.
I don't think it's going to be flattering.
Who's getting the goals?
I think Griffiths will get one. And McGregor,
Here's hoping that that's the case then, and here's hoping as well that we can get a result. And obviously tomorrow night, carry it forward to the St Johnstone game, and let's start putting a run of wins together. More important than that, as well, give us some good form back that we can get the show back in the road. And October's going to be a tremendously hard month in every respect. You've got hard league games. Semi-final coming up at Murrayfield. You've got the Europa League as well. So here's hoping that a bit. So thanks very much for taking the time in your busy schedule to come and talk to your old dad in the dining room as we sit here surrounded by chocolate digestives. And your mum will be happy that we didn't fall out, because it's sometimes when we talk about football we don't agree on things. But I have to say, this has been well. So thanks very much, Sir Anthony Junior.
No worries, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
Well, what do you make of that? 2 St Anthony's for the price of 1. I'm not sure which is the better one. I will not say that. I'll reserve that for my own internal thought processes. Anyway, hopefully things start to improve. The general shitiness and moaniness among some of the Celtic support starts to improve. Don't forget, if you've been following any things on Twitter, then Celtic podcasts are not allowed to talk about anything to do with gossip that's going around about the club. So that's loose lips cost ships. Anyway, enough of me. Hope you enjoyed the podcast with St Anthony and St Anthony Jr. There definitely will be more podcasts along sooner rather than later. I definitely will get round to doing the Celtic Underground Top 10. But enough of me. And I'll say from St Anthony, Michael and myself, good night and God bless. Good night.
In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms suns be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.